It's been a quiet week here in Pittsburgh, my adopted hometown. Final preparations are underway for the arrival of the 220th General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church USA. As if this town didn't already have enough Presbyterians, another 2,000 are being shipped in from all around the country. Calvinists living out their faith decently and in order, passionate about social issues without ever being rude or speaking out of turn. We're sort of an ecclesiastical mix of John the Baptist and Emily Post. Pastor Robert Carlson was planning to attend the General Assembly. He and his family had recently moved to Pittsburgh from Lake Wobegon, and he had just passed the six-month mark at his new church. Pastor Rob served the little congregation of 17th United Presbyterian Church. Given that Allegheny County had 145 Presbyterian churches in it, all the good names had already been taken. But in truth, Rob had fallen in love with his little church. Its motto was, "We're 17th, we have to try harder." And they were quite fond of him. Rob lived in a quiet neighborhood not far from the church, surrounded by nice folk who were pleased to see a young family move in, even if it included a minister. Rob was never quite sure if the neighbors were potential parishioners for 17th UP. So just in case, he worked hard at maintaining a tidy Presbyterian-type home, whatever that meant. The biggest problem, though, was the paper boy, Vernon, who was pushing 80 and had arthritis in his paper-throwing arm. So Rob's copy of the Post-Gazette was lucky if it made it to the grass strip between the gutter and the sidewalk. Now, Rob liked to read his paper first thing every morning. However, Rob had never liked to wear pajamas or bathrobes. He often slept in an old T-shirt from a long-ago Bruce Springsteen concert, and some baggy cotton gym shorts. And if it was hot, well, he omitted the T-shirt. So whenever Vernon tossed the paper into the gutter, Rob would carefully look out through his screen door to see if the coast was clear before making his semi-clad dash out to the gutter to get his paper. But no matter how carefully he looked or tried to time his morning paper chase, invariably, Marty McDonough would come around the corner just at that moment, walking his fat golden retriever, Samson. And to make matters worse, Marty always wanted to tell Rob the latest church joke he had just heard. "Hey, Rob, I got a joke for you. The new pastor was out visiting his parishioners one Saturday afternoon, and all went well until he came to one house where he could tell someone was at home, but they refused to come to the door. He knocked several times, and then he finally took out a note card, and he wrote Revelation 3:20 on the back, and he stuck it in the door. 'Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hear my voice and open it, I will come in to him.' The next day, as Rob was counting the offering, he found his card tucked in the collection plate, and below the message was the notation, 'Genesis 3:10, I heard thy voice in the garden, and I was afraid, for I was naked.'" Now, there were two problems with Marty's jokes. Invariably, Rob had already heard them before, and they always took a while for Marty to tell them, which meant that Rob had to stand and listen uncomfortably while some other neighbor passed by him amused at his morning fashion choices, and Samson's cold nose veered ever closer to his cotton boxer shorts. So after the first time that happened, Rob made sure to look extra carefully for Marty and Samson before dashing out the door. But as soon as his feet hit the pavement, sure enough, he'd hear, "Hey, Rob, what's the difference between Baptists and Presbyterians?" "Baptists won't wave at each other in the liquor store." The same thing happened the next morning. "Hello, Rob. Hey, how many Presbyterians does it take to change a light bulb?" "5, one to screw in the new bulb, and 4 to talk about how much they'll miss the old one." Rob tried getting up a half hour earlier. But again, it was all to no avail. As he bent down to get the paper, he heard, "Morning, Rob. Hey, why are Presbyterians such bad singers?" "Because they're always reading ahead in the hymnal to make sure they agree with the words." The whole experience began to unsettle the new pastor, and so he decided to bring it up at the next minister's gathering. Once a month, the ministers in the East End would come together to talk about faith and scripture, but mostly to talk about their churches. It seemed only fair. Every church has a weekly session for congregation members to get together and complain about the minister. It's called choir practice. Rob's ministerium met in the back room of Ritter's Diner on Baum Boulevard. Ritter's is a Pittsburgh institution. It's a 24-hour cafe in which truck drivers and politicians alike often gather. It's one of those places where you always wipe off the vinyl seat before you slide across into the booth. It's a place where notoriously the smoking and the non-smoking airspace constantly converged, so that the pancake syrup there came in two flavors, maple and menthol. Ritter's eventually lost some of its character when it went smoke-free. But Katie, the waitress, is still there, and she knows that if it's the third Wednesday of the month, then she should send anyone wearing khaki pants and discount rack penny loafers to the back room, because they must be part of the minister's gathering. And so on this occasion, Rob turned to his colleagues, and he broached the subject of religious humor. He told them about Marty and his daily repartee of church jokes. And he asked, how is it possible that such a serious business as religion could become invariably the butt of so many jokes? Now, raising the topic prompted a few of the ministers to share the latest witticisms they themselves had heard. But then Amanda, pastor of the Methodist church down the road, interrupted, and she said, G.K. Chesterton wrote that the test of a good religion is whether you can joke about it. And I believe there's a lot of truth to that. If you can't chuckle at the amazing fact that God chooses to be involved in our messy human lives, then you haven't thought deeply enough about the paradox and the wonder and the mystery that's at the heart of our religion. Another minister chimed in. I think church jokes are shorthand ways for people to talk about hard subjects. Subjects like death and what happens after we die. Everyone hopes that death, when it comes, what follows death is that we're not alone, that we're no longer suffering, and that everything is beautiful and peaceful. But we don't really know how to talk about these subjects, and so we make light of the subject by telling religious jokes. And so our jokes touch on these things. They involve fluffy clouds, because heaven is invariably supposed to be up there somewhere. And we talk about tall gates of gold and pearls, because, well, every desirable place has to have a gate in front of it. And if there has to be a gate, then there must be a gatekeeper. So we've appointed St. Peter that role. But we also hope that Jesus is standing nearby, because Jesus knows us and loves us and forgives us and wants to welcome us inside. The jokes then help us deal with all the hard questions, like what really happens to bad people when they die? What about all those people who've never actually heard about Jesus? And won't heaven be incredibly crowded since billions and billions of people have lived on this earth? Not to mention our pets and that favorite lazy boy recliner that we want to sit in when we watch our reality shows. Won't all those things be somewhere in heaven? Father Regis broke in. He said the jokes can be a good lead-in for an actual serious conversation about faith. In times of real trouble, no one is cracking jokes. in a hospital hospice unit, on a transport plane taking you on a tour of duty to Helmand Province in Afghanistan. No one is laughing then. But what happens in those places is that people stop. And they stop and they ask, are all the things that I've heard about heaven and God and faith really true or not? In those moments, they begin to ask about what they can believe in. And they'll share what their hopes are. And they say, in my heart, I hope that heaven is a place where mom's body is finally well again. Or where dad can see his parents again. Or where my partner is waiting for me. And in those moments, then we as ministers put the jokes aside. And we try to share words of faith. Not because those words are easy and clear and precise answers, but because our words that we share hopefully can touch on mysteries that are deeper than words, but which we know on a gut level are true. And so we find ourselves saying back to them, you know, I don't know what heaven is precisely like, but I trust it's a place of God's design, full of Christ's love, and where we can truly be home at last. I trust that it's a place where our questions are answered and where we're still able to learn new things. And I know that as I think about that heavenly place, it helps me keep in focus on how I want things to be here on earth, so that those familiar words from the Lord's Prayer, on earth as it is in heaven, can finally begin to take root in my own life. Rob listened to his colleagues while Katie passed through their room filling up their coffee cups. A good religion does allow you to joke about it, not to demean it, not to belittle it, but is a way to name and to laugh at our own efforts to believe that somehow we're in control and that we're the masters of the universe. Because it's far worse never to think about God, never to try and to put into words what heaven is like that we can know what earth should be like. Far worse, never to ponder even whimsically what life after this life is going to be. And it's during some moments in our lives, those moments by hospital beds, for example, that our faith conversations flow more easily than usual. But for all those other times in our lives, we could each do worse than to start with a joke about God or a joke about church or about the laughable, paradoxical blend of heaven and earth that is all around us each and every day of our lives. The next morning, Rob found his bathrobe and his slippers and went out for the paper just as he saw Marty and Samson come around the corner. But this time, Rob spoke first. And he said, hey, Marty, a woman dies and she goes to heaven and St. Peter took her on a tour. And they pass a hole that's dark where people are gnashing their teeth and wailing. And the woman says, who's down there? St. Peter says, oh, those are the Catholics who ate meat on Friday. They walk a little farther. They see another pit with people wailing and gnashing, and she says, okay, who's down there? St. Peter said, well, those are the Baptists that went to dances. And a little further along, there was a third pit, which there were a lot of people wailing and gnashing their teeth and rending their clothes. And she said, and those people? And St. Peter said, those are the Presbyterians who ate their salads with a dessert fork. Marty looked at Rob and said, I don't get it. So Rob took a deep breath and he smiled and he said, tell you what, how about if I walk with you and Samson for a while and we can talk about the joke together? And that's the news from Pittsburgh, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, and all the Presbyterians are above average.